Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell. Across the internet from me, your genial host, Tim Goodman from The Hollywood Reporter. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason. I don't think I've ever been called genial.
I just thought I would go with that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where that came from.
No, I like it.
It's a new, again, new year. Mm-hmm. Anything
new
can
year,
happen.
New me.
Mm-hmm. Anything could happen. Hey, you know what's back now? Who's back? It's the same old David Letterman. He's back. There's a new David Letterman show on Netflix, and the first episode dropped today, January 12th, as we record this, his interview with Barack Obama. Plus, he also goes with John Lewis to Selma, and mm-hmm. they walk across the bridge. I watched a little of it this morning. I read your review. Letterman, huge influence for me, looms large in my kind of personal kind of cultural history. I know we talked about him when he was retiring. So tell me what you think of the new Netflix thing.
I really liked it because, it's different. Like, as I put in there, if you're expecting something totally brand new and, you know, all this bells and whistles that you didn't have before with Letterman, maybe say like he's going to be the same old person. That's not it. He's just, you know, I'm glad it's, you know, that Netflix did it. Because as I said, I think the most important thing about the new series is actually getting to see Dave again, which is nice, beard and all. And yeah. He's much more serious. He's much more emotional. He wants to probe issues that are deeper. I credit Netflix, which didn't actually have to give critics the chance to look at these in advance, for not only sending the Obama one, but also for sending George Clooney, which will be the second of the six. And because if he was ever going to go back to sort of this jocular, jokey, late night host thing, he would have done it with Clooney, who he likes and is friends with. And there's a little bit of that in there. I'm not going to say the whole thing is solemn and like NPR-ish and totally, you know, newsy. But he's with Clooney, he would have gone back to his old ways if that's what the show was going to be. So that was a good indicator by showing us that Netflix didn't want us to talk about too much of the content in there or review that episode. But to me, it was a good way. And then Malala is the third, I believe, the third episode, but they give us mm-hmm. a little hint of that one, too. So, yeah, it's a much more serious and solemn Letterman. There are some quips and some banter that's fun. But it's just basically a chance to see him. He's aged a little bit, and I think he's more looking at the world a little differently. He's out of the shackles of doing hey, what movie are you promoting? Or what album are you promoting? Or what TV show are you promoting? And then, you know, you get an anecdote. And then a story, and then a clip, and then they're gone. I have an hour, literally, like it's no commercials. And each one that I saw ran about 57, 58 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's just much more thorough and in depth, but it's not super exciting. I will tell people that people should know that. It's not like super compelling. It's interesting if you like Letterman, and particularly if you like the guests, but it's not like magnet television.
Well, it's a talk show. So when this was announced and they mentioned that he was also going to do like taped stuff, I wondered whether it would be, you know, take the guest somewhere or do something mm-hmm. like that or whatever. And in this one, what it is that he draws a line between John Lewis and civil rights movement and making the presidency of Barack Obama possible. And that's sort of the connection that's happening there. But ultimately, it's just a couple of segments in Selma cutting into a whatever 50-minute long sit down on a stage with Barack Obama. And it is just if you had told me in 1990, let's say, that David Letterman, when he was done with Late Night, would host a show that was entirely focused on his interviewing of people, mm-hmm. I would have laughed and laughed and laughed, because mm-hmm. the joke was always that Letterman was a comedy guy and was terrible at interviewing and hated interviewing people. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about that as I watched the show, because it's like, he can do whatever he wants or nothing. And he chose to have hour-long sit-down interviews with famous people on stage where he can go in-depth with them. And that's just, that's fascinating. And it shows you how much better an interviewer he is than he was when he started. You, turns out, you do something for 30 years, you get better at it.
Exactly.
And that he wants, these are the people he wants to talk to about subjects he wants, he cares about. Because like you said, it's not, I'm promoting a movie, and so let's show the clip.
Yeah, and I think that the second episode with Clooney, what's interesting about that is, so in the first one, when you're talking, he's talking to Barack Obama, and you don't know, well, we've said what's happening now, but when I was watching it, you didn't know what was going to happen, to cut away to John Lewis in Selma, Alabama, and he and Letterman going over the bridge, there's a little like, what? What's going on here? Because it was like they kind of fade the interview out, like almost like a from on stage with Obama, almost like it's a record, and they open this screen up a little brighter to this tape segment, and it's not jarring, but it's weird. And then he spends a lot of time with John Lewis, and then they come back to John Lewis in a second segment, so they're kind of feeling their way, and then in the Clooney one, it opens with him and Clooney joking around, a little more jokey, and then they outside of the LAX airport, and they're having In-N-Out burgers, which was a much more of a Letterman shtick. Mm-hmm. And then in the episode when they're interviewing George Clooney, it breaks again and it opens up, but it goes back to Clooney's hometown in Kentucky, and he goes to his parents and he visits with his parents. But it's not jokey. It actually gets into some very serious stuff. Like they talk about Amal and like refugees, and there's a refugee that they took in, that his parents took in, that Dave interviews at length. And so it's by then it's three topics removed from Clooney at that point. I mean, they're related, but you don't expect that he's going to be spending so much time with this kid. And then it comes back to Clooney on stage, and then they do a couple takeaways in Kentucky again. And then it ends with, he and George out back, you know, having the burgers and talking. But so they're still trying to find their style, but it's very serious. Even the Clooney one was pretty serious, and there were some funny things in it, but you can tell he's wants a little bit of, gravitas and a little bit depth.
Yeah, it's interesting. The thing that surprised me, and I saw it in the trailer, and I thought, oh, is this how they're going to do this? And I think it's because Letterman likes being in front of an audience. Mm-hmm. So what they seem to be doing is every interview is on stage in a theater. I guess Clooney was in L.A., Obama was in New York, where they rent out a theater. And people come knowing that it's David Letterman, presumably, but they don't know who the guest is. Right. And they watch the show. What surprised me, I mean, I guess I'm a little surprised. I was thinking a little more Barbara Walters, like this would be in a controlled environment somewhere. But I think Letterman he gets off on the electricity of a live audience, right? I think that is probably what's going on here. And it looks really good because, you know, it's stepped down. They're shooting these with long focal length, 24 frame a second. It looks like a film of an interview, right? It's like a concert film.
It's gorgeous. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And so it looks really good. And the sound, and I'm going to tell you, as somebody who now spends a lot more time thinking about the sound of things, I think the sound is crappy because you always have an echo because you're always hearing the speakers in the theater venue, especially since this is a temporary setup for one thing and then they go away. And you do hear the audience, and that's fine, but you also hear kind of like this echoey room sound. And I'm a little disappointed in that because it feels like a little, to me, it feels kind of cheap. And it's really kind of weird compared to the visuals, which look really good. Although it is weird because, again, it's like, am I watching a movie about a David Letterman interview here? Is that what's going on? But it still looks great. And the conversation is good. I don't want to obsess over the style and lose the conversation because I think Letterman's picking people he's comfortable with and that he cares about and he wants to talk to. And that makes all the difference in the world when he can be engaged like that. And there's a moment early on in the Obama episode where Obama completely turns turns the tables, because they, you know, Dave draws the parallel that they're both people who were in a job for a long time and then left it and had this question of like, well, what do I do now? And Obama like starts asking Letterman questions, and you can see the moment where Letterman like immediately flips it back and says, this is not how this is supposed to go. I ask right. the questions here.
Yeah.
And it's great. I mean, it's really great. It just, I think you're right. They're feeling their way a little bit, and that's fine. Like I think it's good anyway, but and it's happened so quickly since the announcement that I think they literally were like, let's just dive in. Let's just record these. We'll get the venues. We'll set it up. We'll make it happen. And I do wonder if it'll evolve or not, because it feels to me like I kind of hope it's a work in progress anyway, because I feel like the segments could be attached together a little bit more, and it could be a little bit more, you know, technically maybe a little more locked together in terms of things like getting the sound right and all of that. But who knows? Maybe this is exactly what they want it to be. I don't know. I'm happy to have Dave Letterman pop up into our lives every month. That's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what it is, and then, yeah. And it's fine.
An interview. I mean, like if you want to watch an interview, that's what you're going to get. So obviously, if you're interested in the guest, it's going to be more interesting.
Or, I think that's key. Yeah.
Or mm-hmm. if you just really like Letterman and are willing to let him take you sort of wherever he is because he's very interesting when he's engaged, and he is in these interviews. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good to have him back. Okay, you also reviewed, we talked about it last week, but you also reviewed Counterpart. Your review is now up at HollywoodReporter.com. This is the sort of John Le Carré spies meets like Fringe kind of, you know, yeah. sci-fi element. It's on Stars. We mentioned this because it's J.K. Simmons. I watched the pilot after we talked last week, and I thought it was terrific. The episode
right,
one,
uh-huh,
I thought it was terrific. It's set in Germany, which adds this whole other layer where you've got British actors and German actors and American actors, and everything's kind of, you know, it's the Berlin skyline, and the geography, the buildings look different. Like all of that, I think, adds to that. It's not Cold War, but there is kind of a wall between two very different worlds, right? So you still kind of get that vibe, but it's a science fictional, maybe kind of Cold War. I thought it was really good. So I'm going to second your recommendation and calling it compelling. I think good performance by J.K. Simmons, some really other interesting actors. Harry Lloyd is good. I like mm-hmm. seeing him in everything, and he's good in this as a kind of nervous supervisor who doesn't like J.K. Simmons, but suddenly he's very important. I thought that was really good. Yeah, I liked it a lot. I'm really looking forward to more episodes.
Yeah, I think that the J.K. Simmons performance is really outstanding, and it gets so twisty so quickly. You're just like, whoa, yeah. So I really like that. So I'm glad you watched it, and it's beautifully shot. You know?
It is. It looks so good. In fact, one of the things I was thinking while I was watching it is we've gotten to the point with, you know, genre TV stuff that's got science fictional elements, fantasy elements in it. I mean, on one level, the most successful movies that are out there are genre movies, right? Superhero movies, sci-fi movies, things like that are hugely successful. And yet in TV, there's sort of been prestige, and then there's been kind of the genre stuff. And I like the genre
right.
stuff, but it's
mm-hmm.
never, some of it is not worthy of prestige, and some of it was maybe worthy of it, but was never granted it because of what it was. And I look at a show like this and I'm like, oh my God, this is a prestige genre show, and it's even more exciting. It's a mixing of two genres. It is a spy show, not James Bondy, but a John Le Carré kind of slow burn spy show with that science fiction element on top of it. And my thought while watching it was, this is way too classy and these actors are way too good for a TV show about parallel universes, and yet that's what it is. I was very happy.
It's an interesting approach on that genre, and I there's some interest, there's some things that they haven't quite explained yet in the addressing of how it all happened.
Yeah.
And maybe they won't ever, But as you get into a few more episodes, the twists come fast and furious, and I loved it. It was really good. And new actors pop up, and you're like, oh, I guess you got cast after the pilot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw your list of the other actors that are in it, and I thought, ah, then they went to series, and they went and they cast
some
more.
Yeah, they got Richard Schiff and Stephen Ray.
Because there's only about four actors in the pilot, like, which I think is good, because they want to keep it simple. So you've got the spy master and the Harry Lloyd kind of bureaucrat guy, and you've got J.K. Yep. Simmons, and you've got essentially the assassin who they're trying to catch, and that's kind of everybody who's in it, and that's okay,
and you barely see Olivia Williams,
right?
Because she's in the one world, she's in a coma.
In the hospital, right? So she's unrecognizable. So
yeah, but in future episodes, oh my God, she. She's important.
Yeah, so it's good. If this intrigues you, please check it out. That's coming to Stars on the 21st, which is a week from Sunday. But if you do have the Stars app or your cable on demand or whatever, you can get the first episode now. It's already there, which is how I watched it. It didn't come on screeners from the back of a truck like some things. It actually I saw that by a
to you, yes.
You too can be legitimate. Yeah. No, you have real screeners. I have screeners with those really shady quotes around them.
Well, it's funny because we were talking about it, and I noticed on my Twitter feed that apparently Stars. The Stars session with J.K. Simmons about Counterpart is up at TCA right now. So people are tweeting about it. So I was like, oh, I should probably retweet that story out.
As we were speaking about it.
So I did that.
That's great.
Yeah.
So speaking of genre stuff, I had no idea that there was a Philip K. Dick anthology. But mm-hmm. here it is. So Amazon Prime premiering today. What can you tell me about it?
It's interesting that you didn't know about that, right?
Yeah, well, The Magicians came back. A series I like came back for season 3 on Sci-Fi this week. And I surprise everybody out there listening. You probably didn't know it either, because I had no idea. And my TiVo was like, oh, I've got an episode of The Magicians for you. I'm like, really? Surely that's a mistake. And I looked. It's like, no, season 3, episode 1. Oh, it's so easy to just completely miss things now.
It's funny. I laugh at, like, there's a denial in the industry. I would say there's even a denial within, like, people who are maybe not the people who are doing it, certainly not fellow critics and fellow TV reporters and such. But I think that there's a denial amongst their editors and their publication that the whole concept of how to cover something like this is vastly outrun our ability to do it, and we have to change how we do it, because you're a sci-fi guy, and you are on record of as loving The Magicians. I know there were a few reviews that came out, which is interesting for a third season of a show where people were like, wow, it's like, now it's better than ever. But it just popped up and you didn't really know about it. You're a sci-fi guy, and Philip K. Dick, who's a famous sci-fi writer, now has this anthology series, which a lot of money went into at Amazon, and yet it's out. It popped up on Amazon today. We just can't keep up with these things, and so it's really interesting how the kind of world we're in, and it's totally changing. But it's funny. I'll say I was watching this. Amazon sent all 10 episodes, so it was kind of a delight to pour through this. And
is it wrong for me to say this is Amazon trying to do Black Mirror?
It's not completely wrong. I think that they're not trying. I don't think they're trying to go for the darkness of Black Mirror.
Right. I support that.
In fact, as I say in my review, the first episode is Ronald D. Moore, who is an executive. Well, there's 14 executive producers in this damn thing, but Ronald D. Moore is one of the great overseers of this project, along with Philip K. Dick's daughter. And his first episode that he does is very familiar. And if you're a Black Mirror fan, it's probably overly familiar. And it ends in a way where you think, oh, yeah, I mean, I get it. And I see it. It's not a twist. And, like, God, it was, I guess it was kind of going for, like, a dark or kind of crushing ending. But if you've seen Black Mirror, it's like nothing, right? You're like, oh, that's it? Okay. And so I think some of the early criticism that's coming back is that this is, I think it is an uneven series. But you can't fault Philip K. Dick, who wrote this stuff, some of this stuff in the 50s, for having his concepts sort of appropriated by other people and just done better elsewhere. It's happened. That's true. I mean, there's, you know, there's Humans, there's Westworld, there's this, there's Black Mirror, and there's other stuff coming. And I just, I kind of make a point out of this of saying that I think a lot of sci-fi people are a little too gatekeeperish about content. So I feel, right? And so I feel like everybody else should just, because I think there, after I had watched like 4 episodes, I saw some reviews that were, like, oh, it's really uneven. It's no Black Mirror. And I was like, okay, but what a great world we live in where this is out there for you. And it's an anthology series. You don't have to watch all 10 in a row. It's not, you know, ongoing. You can pick and choose. And just like Black Mirror, your results may vary depending on what you like in sci-fi.
Right.
But here's what I will tell you. If anybody got a whiff of some of those early reviews saying that it's not as good as Black Mirror, I think you should really give this show a shot. Because there's really great episodes here. There's other ones that don't work quite as well, but they're still entertaining and they're still good. It's just that, okay, maybe Black Mirror or somebody other conceptualized the idea in a different way and maybe made it more creative, but you have 10 episodes, 10 hour long episodes, each has a different director and a different writer, just like Black Mirror for the most part. And, the stuff here is good too. It's the whole, I was saying it's like a box of chocolates kind of thing. It's like to dip in, you'll be surprised. After I watched the episodes and I saw some other reviews and people were like, I like this episode best. And I was like, huh, I would have put that pretty low on my list, but I love this episode and you're saying it's terrible. So it's like, it's very much like that. I think people just need to go into it, especially if you're a sci-fi fan, go into it. And there's some really good stuff and lots of stars, by the way. So that's good.
Yeah, the one of the funny side effects of the world we live in where we have streaming, we have so much TV being produced, and we also have had the prestige issue where movie stars don't do television is over. What you've ended up with now is this resurgence in anthology shows. And, you know, anthology shows can be great, especially if they have a brand or a concept that works. So, like, Black Mirror, Charlie Brooker has defined what Black Mirror, like, we know what a Black Mirror story is, and it's kind of like The Twilight Zone, but more and worse, like in darker.
Right.
And then something like this, it's sort of, it's taking Philip K. Dick stories as jumping off points, but you do get talented writers and directors and stars who are not going to commit to a series, but will commit to doing a little movie, because these are all essentially little 1 hour movies. And I think it's great. I think it's great because you're right. It is like a little box of chocolates. And if you find a brand that works for you, you can just kind of dig in. But you get lots of choices this way by having this stuff. And there's no big commitment, right? Like, you're not subscribing to a thing that's going to run for 7 seasons either. You can watch 3 of them and walk away, and you don't need to go back. If for something like Black Mirror, you don't need to. I've heard a bunch of people this year, the buzz on this latest drop of Black Mirror has been big enough that I've heard a whole bunch of people asking, do I need to watch the rest of Black Mirror? And the answer is beautiful, because it's absolutely not. Like, it's not even, well, you can. It's just like, no, pick an episode that sounds interesting in the description on Netflix and press play. It literally doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's that's what's great about it. And I think you'll find in this one, and you can read my review, I've got some of my, I kind of mentioned the ones that are my favorites. And I love some of the actor pairings are interesting. And even ones that are not my favorite, I think are a good hour spent.
All right.
You can't always say that about television.
No, so you can't. All right. Nice. Yeah. We should talk at least briefly. I think we've talked about it before, but I want to point people to your piece about it going into more detail. This is as the Winter Press Tour is going on right now in LA, and one of the things that happens is TV executives go on stage and they talk, and sometimes they share things like John Landgraf is well known to actually kind of have his State of the Union kind of conversation. Other executives like Maren Dungey at ABC sort of just don't say anything and are just completely like, yes, just not say anything. And you're saying, even though you don't feel like so bad about the network executives because they turned the dinosaur ship around and they're like, no, the industry's fine, you still kind of feel bad for the guy who's running Fox because they're going to lose their studio and what happens after that. So you wrote a piece about that. And also, I thought interesting speculation that maybe that the people who are running the studios might be out the door for Amazon or someplace like that pretty soon, too. So bad stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was one of my favorite. I mean, it was a story that just couldn't get done. I mean, I think what the deal went through in December, and we were all the end of the year.
Well, announced, right? I mean, they have to get approvals and stuff, but yeah.
But there's so much, and you and I have talked on the podcast about and you talked to Natalie Jarvie as well about Hulu. And then I think there's some really interesting things about Hulu and FX to discuss in future columns, but I didn't want to throw them all together because I think this Fox one is really interesting and it's not getting as much attention. And when they were at TCA, they kind of poo-pooed the idea and said they couldn't talk about it and blah, blah, blah. But they were saying it's business as usual. And of course, that was where I was like, okay, now I'm going to do a column because it's not business as usual. And first of all, I don't think those two executives will be there. They much prefer the studio to the network, and the studio is now owned by Disney. And there's the clear, and my whole point of this column basically is, if you're not going to build a network to supply content for Fox, then, and he sold two perfectly good networks in the deal to Disney, then Fox has a real problem. It really can't survive in the current environment that way, which makes me think he's going to sell it. And that's something he's going to wait until he gets approval, government approval, and the deal goes through. And I think he would flip it pretty quick after that. So I kind of talked about a Fox executive who I don't know, but who just got promoted. In fact, he came over from the studio, which is now going to be owned by Disney.
Oh, yeah, right.
On like November 25th, like the day after Thanksgiving, he got hired as right. And he's just like, I got my new job at Fox. And like, oh, right. We sold everything but that, basically. And so I just kind of used him as like, oh, dude, I am so sorry. And I think there's some good information, if you like industry stuff, about what's going to happen at Fox. And I was a little surprised that nobody from at TCA really turned something around that said, oh my God, this network's over.
I'm a little surprised that I haven't seen speculation along your line of thinking about would Rupert Murdoch sell the Fox broadcast network to someone else, because it doesn't necessarily fit, even if he wants to walk away with the national cable channels, the broadcast network doesn't necessarily fit. He just can't sell it to Disney because they own ABC. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any of that speculation. The name that came to mind for me right away was Sony, because Sony has a studio and does not have a TV network.
Yeah.
But that's a good question. Like, would that be the other shoe that drops after this deal is made? Is somebody who's got a studio and is looking for a place to put programming pick up the Fox broadcast network? And I don't know, we used to joke back in the 90s, we always joked as Sony was buying everything about suddenly you'd have Sony TV, but who knows, maybe, or maybe somebody else. But it would seem like, who's out there who has a studio and doesn't have a network? Like,
yeah,
that would be the person. And Warner Brothers doesn't have a network other than their joint venture with CBS. So I guess that would be another possibility.
Sure. They could get out of that.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, CBS can, I'm sure if CBS, since CBS and Warner's co-own the CW, CBS owns 1.5 networks and it's not a problem. So maybe that would be not a blocker, and that they could buy out the Fox network that way too. But it's not something I thought about until I read your article about it. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, is there that other shoe to drop there? Because then they would get that sweet vertical integration synergy stuff happening by having a broadcast network and a studio supplying the shows for the network.
Yeah, it's just funny, because I kind of harp on this because it's sort of an end of an era. There are really not that many people who percentage-wise, especially critics, but there's just not a lot of people in the who are covering television who cover the industry. There's percentage-wise, I'm not saying there's like four of us, but it's a pretty small number. And a lot of critics who used to cover the industry are just overwhelmed with content right now, and they're stuck having to do all these reviews. But it's so funny. Every TCA, they just would knock us over the head with like vertical integration. We have to own it. You know, we saw the downsides of that early on. And then it got a little bit better, but it was like, if we don't own things, we can't survive. We can't. That's what they kept telling us for years after years. Fox, everybody. It's like, if we don't own it, and if we don't have and if we didn't even make it, we demand an ownership, partial ownership stake in it, so that we can get profits off of it.
Like, that's the business model here. Is
that's the business
model. You got to own it.
Yeah. So for me to not be a TCA, and for the people who are running Fox, who are very talented and very smart, to come out and basically say, hey, you know what? Yeah, that model works, sure. But like, you know what it left out? It left out all these independents, and maybe it's a good time for independents to get their work on. And I was just like, oh my God, that is classic spin. Like I literally was laughing when I read the quotes. I was like, how could they say that with a straight face? And it's because they're getting the hell out of there. I can tell you that. They're not going to be at Fox. And then they need a studio. And so, I mean, the whole thing can go away if Rupert says, okay, now I took my money that I made and I'm going to restart another Fox TV studio. Okay, great. Then Fox can still exist. But
yeah, but why would he sell studios if he wants to start studios? Doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense, yeah.
To a company that has studios of its own, right? That's the whole deal, is to get out of this. I don't know. It's fascinating. We'll have to keep an eye on it this year.
Yeah, fun stuff.
There are a couple other premieres. I don't know if we want to talk about Mosaic until
probably
next
not.
Week.
Yeah, let's wait on Mosaic.
On HBO, although I'm fascinated because I watched it in its app form.
Yes.
And there's a movie form of it that was sort of like second thought of it was to get more funding for the project, was for Steven Soderbergh to agree to cut it into a linear miniseries away from the kind of like little blobs in the app. So maybe next week we'll talk about that. But last week we promised to talk about Detectorist Season 3, which drops Monday. And you and I have both extolled the virtues of Detectorist to a lot of people who watched it, especially on Amazon. Is it Amazon? I think so. And maybe on Netflix.
Yeah, I think.
They've been very excited that season 3 is coming. And then I have to tell them all, yeah, it's coming to Acorn, which is another streaming service that you will need to sign up for if you want to watch Detectorist season 3, because it's coming Monday to Acorn. But it's so good. It's so good.
It's such a great series. And I have had to unfortunately push my review of that. I was going to go today, but there's just been so much stuff that's happening. The Letterman thing was one of the main things. And then Mosaic. And I was in the middle of trying to spend some time going through that Mosaic app. And I was doing that. I was following in the story through the app, frustratingly, I think.
Yeah, I've got some.
It's a great, it's a fun idea. It's just execution-wise, I'm like, ugh, mm-hmm. It's just making me too much work for me. And then having watched the early parts of this thing, you can sort of see, I think it kind of messed up both ends of it. And I don't know, I mean, I'll get to that in my review. But anyway, that took away some time from The Detectorist. And I love that series. I won't, you know, there is talk that it's the final season, but
yeah, Mackenzie Crook has said that he's done with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen anything to deny that. I watched it thinking maybe it's just my wish casting happening here, but like, this is the kind of show that they do a Christmas special of on BBC in 3 years or something like that, where they're like, Mackenzie Crook has an idea, he wants to work with the cast again, and they come back and they do an episode and then they go away again. I doubt we'll see another series of it, another season's worth, but I would love to see these characters again in a few years. It is because season 3 is great. It is just of a kind with the others. It's not that, you know, they sent them off to the family off to Africa for a while at the end of the last season, and then Andy came back for the Christmas special, and mm-hmm. And so in this one they're back, and they're back in their little village, and they're doing their usual stuff. So
And I will say, I don't want to Columbo early. Columbo you, I guess. It has to, when you Columbo somebody, I guess you have to kind of do it that way.
I don't know. You could self-Columbo, but that's just like a hesitation.
Yeah. And then the Pink Panther also did a little. I think Columboing is also straight from the Pink Panther school, too.
Fair enough.
I don't think we've talked about... Have we talked about Get Ready to Check the Box, The End of the Fucking World?
No, we should do that, too. We should talk about The End of the Fucking World, and we have Check the Box now.
Okay.
Because it's the title, people.
It's the title of the show.
When the president calls something a shithole, you just got to say shithole. That's just how it is.
That's just part of it.
And, I have a letter about that show, so maybe we can get to that in a minute.
Okay, good.
Everybody just, The Detectorist is great and you should watch it. And I wanted to say, I love that it makes me happy. It is gentle. It is funny. It is sweet. The cast is amazing. Toby Jones is so good.
He's so good.
But we get some other characters. Rachel Sterling plays Andy's girlfriend and the mother of his child. They are great together. Her mom on the show and in real life is Diana Rigg. So that's a nice thing. They say, hey, mom, can you be on my little show about guys with metal detectors that are out in the countryside? And there's a nice... thing with Lance, Toby Jones's daughter, who he's just sort of reconciled with after she grew up separate from him. And he never really knew her as a child, but now he knows her as an adult. And that's a great character, too. Plus the quirky members of the Metal Detecting Society, their enemies, Simon and Garfunkel, who are these guys who look like Simon and Garfunkel. It's all good. It makes me happy. And Tim, after watching season 3, I have to say, I'm putting this in my list of my favorite shows of all time. It's in the top 10. It is. Wow. I want to give it a big hug. I love it. So
that is great. And that gives me so much excitement going forward to do the review on it. So,
all right.
Yay.
Have you seen
when we tag team on this?
Have you seen it yet? Have you watched them yet? And you're just writing the review, or do you need to watch?
I have not seen them. So you're ahead of me.
We'll catch up again next week about it, but it's Detectorist. It's not like, oh, well, this took a turn. It's like, no,
right. It's Detectorist.
No, you'll just, there's magpies in a field. It's Detectorist. It is what it is. Let's do some letters, including, we'll get a side to the show that you didn't review, but that Dan reviewed. First letter is from Art from the 425, though, who says, in the last episode previewing the Golden Globes, so I guess this is a little while ago, but it's like Tim referred to some of the choices as dumbassery. As a fellow devotee of Fargo, I believe Tim knows the correct phrase is pinheadedry. Art from the 425. I thought you would like that a little.
Well, there's room in the lexicon for all kinds of names.
That's right. Yeah. There's plenty of stupidity.
The mastery is still good.
Mm-hmm. There's plenty of stupidity to go around, quite frankly. It's one of the most common things. Yes, one of the most common elements in the universe. Hydrogen and stupidity, right? That might have even been was that a Philip K. Dick? Probably not, but it could have been. We also got a link on Facebook that made me laugh. I think it was Harlan Ellison who said hydrogen and stupidity. Anyway, Peter on Facebook sent us a link to an Onion story that made me laugh because the headline is very simple. It is "Man not accepting any more television recommendations at this time." It's about right.
Harry Slade.
Fair.
Dead.
Fair.
That's beautiful.
You got us. Jake, here we go. Jake from the 617, so Boston, right? Says, hey guys, the end of the fucking world. No, it's not the new slogan for 2018. It's another new Netflix original. I saw that Dan wrote up the THR review, so I was wondering if you'd gotten a chance to check it out. It's weird, romantic, twisted, macabre, sweet, and very British. Plus, it's only 8 20-ish minute episodes and thus extremely bingeable. Is this up your alley? Cheers, Jake from the 617. What do you think?
Yeah, and I hadn't read Dan's review, and it's interesting because I was just catching up with things, and I think, I don't know when that was. It was a while ago, the beginning of January. It was right at the end.
What he said is it was like New Year's Eve, and he expected to watch the first one and then move on to something else, and he binged the entire thing right then.
Yeah, and I did actually the same thing. It was funny because I was looking at this note from a little Inside Baseball, but the the publicist from Netflix said, look, you guys are doing all, everybody's doing their top 10 lists. And it's kind of funny because they actually know that they dropped this right at a point when who's going to see it? I mean, that they do. I don't know kind of how Netflix or what they're reading or what they're doing, what their plans are, but they drop shows whenever they want to, basically. And but they had this little email to critics and TV people that said, hey, look, we know you're making your lists and they're great. And whether we're on it or not, that's cool. But like, here's our own list of things that we like that you might not have caught on our own channel. I think there was a little wink, wink there because we had talked about, you know, so many Netflix shows. And it popped up on a, and I know those publicists, and it popped up on a couple of their lists, and they were like raving about it and saying, if you like this kind of stuff, I was like, what is this show? So I hadn't read Dan's review yet. And I just said, I'm going to try it. And I binged it. It's and I tweeted out, again, not on Twitter that much, but I tweeted out that it's currently penciled in as my number one show of 2018.
Yeah, and you know, he said much the same thing when he reviewed it. Like, it's like, this is such a great surprise. It's nice to start out the year with something like that, isn't it?
It came out of nowhere. There's really nothing like it. It's basically from a comic book series or like a graphic novel, and sometimes those don't, you know, in translation don't work for television very well. Sometimes they do, obviously, but there's nothing kind of like this on TV. It surprised me at like so many different turns. It's really dark and bleak and funny. I think you have to have a really kind of twisted sense of humor to find some of the funniness. It's unexpectedly emotional. It's certainly out there. There's so many great performances. The two really young stars, they're probably teenagers though. Alex Lothar and Jessica Barden are really fantastic and eclectic. And I would just tell the people, yeah, there's a lot of great stuff that we talked about in the show, but like, if you have a really kind of twisted sense of humor and want to see something that you haven't really seen on TV in a long time, go watch that show right now, or as soon as this podcast is over, binge it, and you will love it. It's really quick.
All right. Definitely. It's a nice, nice recommendation. Everybody I've talked to who's seen it likes it. So Channel 4 in the UK is where that was from. Yeah, but now Netflix is spreading the word everywhere else. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jake in the 617 for setting that one up for us. And the box is so checked this time. It's not so our fault. It's the name of the, I mean, there's asterisks in it, but you can't say the asterisks there.
Yeah, you can't say that.
That's not how it works. It's not the end of the
asterisk. It's funny, in the real title, asterisk. Like when people were putting this in the paper, they're using little actual kind of asterisks in the headline. But in the show, they use little teeny X's.
Little tiny X's, yeah. Three little X's. So it's the end of the fixing world.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what that is by.
That sounds great. Yeah. That's why we don't say that. All right. This one, it comes from our, I would say, faithful listener now. This is Michael in the 415 up in Inverness. This is the television industry veteran who has retired and now just listens to podcasts about television instead.
Yes. Can I just tell Michael, by way of special technology direct-to-consumer comment, right, that I have actually been reading his, he and I have been conversing via email for years, and he has sent me a few recently that I haven't got back to him on, but I have read them and I will get back to them. All right. Life is kind of a swamp.
He had one that I wasn't going to read that he wrote about that was like, I swear this is a show. Speaking of the end of the XXXing world, he was like, there was the show about a comet on a collision course with our planet. It was going to hit and all of that. And like, could you remember the show? And is there a second season? And I wrote him back and I said, yeah, that's Yumi and the Apocalypse. They're not making a second season.
No,
but
not a second season, but it was a fun first season. Yeah.
Speaking of the literal end of the XXXing world. All right. Anyway, exactly. his letter here made me laugh because what he said was, this is why empires fall. Call it the broken window theory, the death of a thousand cuts. Call it Gulliver immobilized by thousands of Lilliputian strings. Call it what you will. If we're to maintain altitude as we circle the drain of our inevitable cultural collapse, any further use of the word lighted rather than lit must cease and desist immediately, if not sooner. I blame this on Ernest Hemingway, who, despite his brilliant contributions to the world of writing, polluted our cultural aquifer with his short story, A Clean, Well-Lighted Place, which wasn't all that good in the first place, and left newspaper and other media writers saddled with the utterly misplaced sense of obligation to follow suit ever since then. You don't green light something, or it's not green lighted, it's green lit. It's past tense. As a truly gifted writer, Tim, you must not perpetuate such a linguistic abomination, this barbaric monstrosity, this violation of all that is right and true and good. Please, gentlemen, come to your senses and help turn the tide. Our civilization hangs in the balance. Other than that, nice podcast.
Thanks, Michael. For the record, if I didn't say it last time, I wrote greenlit. They changed it.
Editors, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Brutal. And I always write greenlit, and it was like green. It always tends to green lighted.
Oh, come on, THR editors, get with us. It is Hemingway's fault. Hemingway. We're going to blame Hemingway. Papa Hemingway. It's his fault. A couple more. These are from Twitter, because as I'm going to do it right here, I'm going to give you the numbers right here. Great way to reach us. You tweet at TVTM. It's like the perfect Twitter address for this podcast, at TVTM, yes, four perfect letters. It's the name of the podcast. It's great. And with Twitter now letting you type like a novel into Twitter and it's still being a tweet, you can get a good question in there. So that's the best way. You can also email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com if you want to, but TVTM tweets are the best. And this one comes from James. I don't know what his... it's James and Twitter. Let's just say James from Twitter. And he says, Planet Earth 2 just dropped on Netflix. Or maybe I just noticed it was there. No, I think it did just drop on Netflix. And it's amazing. We talked about it, of course, with the snakes and the whatever they were chasing. It's amazing. My 10-year-old daughter and I are loving it. Her review is this: Dad, this is even better than Star Wars. Let's not get delusions of grandeur, kid, but still. So that made me laugh. And then the other one is coming from Germany, because this is a tweet from Zaunkönigin. Zaunkönigin, is that like Lawn King? Something like that, I think. It's been a long time since I took German. Zaun, is that lawn? I don't know. Maybe not. I'll translate the German after the show. Anyway, this is good. I just discovered that Netflix Germany is uploading new episodes of The Good Place Season 2 one day after they aired in the US. Amazon Prime has done similar things with The Affair and other shows. Finally, some improvement on distribution of US TV in Europe. And I wanted to read this because my daughter went with a friend on their family vacation over the holidays to Mexico, and she came back caught up with The Good Place to the current episode. And I was like, how did that happen? She said, Mexican Netflix. Because it turns out, and I think this is really awesome, a lot of US TV now just sells straight to Amazon or Netflix and is immediately everywhere else in the world. And we think of it as just TV here in America. But those shows that used to be like they were never available or they were only available months later now are just dropping the next day everywhere else in the world on Netflix, which is cool. That's really cool. I love that now people who want to watch The Good Place are not waiting for the season to end here and for it to be programmed on some broadcast channel in their country. Instead, they're watching it along with us, like just a day later. That's awesome. I like that a lot. I think the world is a better place with the simultaneous worldwide release.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know. That's all I got. And somebody's tried to send us a new drop animal, and I'm not going to read that letter.
I don't know.
No more dropping.
People are trying to shock me and scare me. That's what I think.
No more animals dropping out of trees. It's banned. No. It frightens me too much. I'm still in my happy place for the detectorists. Which, detectorists, there are lots of trees in the detectorists. In season 3, there are lots of trees. in fields. And you know what doesn't happen?
Nothing drops from them like a bear.
Monsters do not drop out of them and
or
kill the detectorists.
Frozen iguana.
No, it does not happen. All right, so you know how to reach us. We'll be back next week. We're going to talk about we'll talk more about Mosaic and like how that works and doesn't work then.
But yes, let's do that.
But until then, Tim, have a great weekend.
All right, you too. We'll talk to everybody later.